Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Paul Emmerich France. Paul is a national board certified teacher, literacy specialist, keynote speaker, and the author of two books, Reclaiming Personalized Learning and Humanizing Distance Learning. In all of his writing and speaking, he aims to convey one central message that we must teach and learn in the pursuit of deeper sense of collective humanity and for no other reason. He pours his heart and soul into his writing, and you can find his work in a number of educational publications such as Edutopia, EdSearch, and ASCD's Educational Leadership, the International Literacy Association's Literacy Today, and Learning Forward's The Learning Professional. He's also been featured at SXSWEDU, as well as in The New Yorker, Wired, and The Atlantic. And as a side note, I found out about Paul's work from reading Educational Leadership. He currently consults with teachers, schools, and school districts, and offers educational support to families in pods and one-on-one settings. He's also a proud member of the LGBTQ plus community, husband to David, and dad to two dogs, Maya and Barley. Welcome to the podcast, Paul.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad to chat with you today about your work. And, you know, having read several articles that you have written, I'm really excited to have you on the podcast. Well, let's start out with the question I ask everybody to start out with. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, I think being a teacher, right, you're in the trenches and actively trying to crawl out a lot. But the story that always comes to mind first for me when I think of just a time where I had to build some resilience was when I was working on coming out as a teacher. When I started teaching in 2010, I think a part of me always thought that I would just sort of keep my identity as a gay man sort of separate from teaching or just quiet. And there were a number of reasons for that. And I think it's something that a lot of LGBTQIA plus people feel like, can I share this of myself? Can I, you know, really just be open about who I am? And it wasn't until it would have been the fall of 2013 that I felt, you know, really compelled to sort of start the coming out process as a teacher. And it was because a colleague of mine, Marcus, who is still a good friend of mine to this day, he came to me and he said, this was right after the state of Illinois, which is where I teach currently, or where I work currently, I should say, and where I've taught, had just legalized marriage equality at the time. Mm-hmm. And he came to me and he said, you know, we should do a lesson on this. Mm-hmm. And there was part of me that was like, absolutely, yes, let's do it. And there was a part of me that, you know, wasn't sure if we should, because I knew that if we did, I would have to come to terms with the fact that there was homophobia baked into my school. And I hadn't really had a chance to see it yet because I hadn't put myself in that position to, you know, actually bear witness to it. We ultimately decided to try to go forward with the lesson, and we got in, you know, to make a very long story short, we got into quite a bit of trouble with our principal and with the school district. And it was, yeah, it was one of the first times that I felt like I was really in the trenches and trying to crawl my way out with not a lot of support. You know, I think the thing that was hardest about that was, you know, I sort of had to cling to my own values meanwhile, while even people I considered to be close friends of mine who knew about my identity, my partner at the time, right? They weren't even on like willing to go to bat for me or to like stick up for me or even to stick up for the idea of welcoming the LGBTQ classroom welcoming the LGBTQ community into the school. And so that was really hard. And it was also really transformative for me because now, you know, after being challenged in that way and having my values challenged, you know, I think it forces you to take stock of what actually matters to you and what's really important to you. And now I know how important that is to me, so much so to the point where, like, when I was interviewing for my last teaching job, I went into that interview and I said, I am a very proud, very openly gay teacher. Mm-hmm. And I will be that way in my next position. Can I do that here? You know, and it's given me, I guess, the confidence to own that. And like, and it's also given me the, I don't know if it's strength or if it's resilience, to just say goodbye to certain organizations or people when they can't accept my full self. And I think that's like the value of building that sort of resilience, is that you learn where your boundaries are, and you learn how to put yourself in situations where you know you will be validated and supported.
Well, thanks for being vulnerable and talking about that, because, you know, I'm thinking back to just coursework and professional development for educators. And you mentioned 2010, and I remember I took something over the summer of 2006, actually, supporting our LGBTQ plus students, right? And so there's been PD available for years for the educators, right? But actually, you know, it depends, I think, also where you work. Like you said, you could be much more supported in another school or district, being your authentic self, maybe than how it went when you did this lesson at that school.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, this is an important conversation to be having right now as well, because, you know, school districts across the country are banning discussions about race and racism because of fear, right? And one of the things that was said to me at the time was, you know, Paul, maybe in 5 or 10 years, this will be okay to talk about in schools, but right now it's just not the time, and our community just isn't ready. And now I look back at this, and this was almost nine years ago.
Yeah.
And it's motivating to see how far we've come, and that, you know, there's like all these picture books about LGBTQ inclusion now, and the teachers are more readily available to start engaging with this work. But we can see that there's just so much more work to do. And it starts with just sort of talking about it and, you know, understanding where our biases come into play and how they impact how we feel about certain topics. And so I'm still hopeful, even though there are a lot of challenges right now, I'm still very hopeful that, you know, teachers will take it upon themselves to start having those conversations in the classroom.
And I think, since my experience is mostly in secondary level, and I've always had colleagues and students who are openly LGBTQ plus, but, you know, thinking of the elementary level, I think it's important to have a role model to look up to, right? And have somebody who is openly authentic there, because there are a lot of kids that are questioning already, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade. There's a lot of kids that know already when they're preschool age, right? So being able to identify with a staff member and, you know, have them as a support, I hope, you know, as we move into the next couple of school years, that more people can, you know, support the kids, you know, whether they're LGBTQ plus or they're allies. So, you know, even at that level, at the elementary level, I think it's very important.
Yeah, I was just going to add too that, you know, it feels strange to say it this way, but I'm just going to say it this way anyway.
Sure.
Like, you know, kids I recently taught third grade, right? Kids that are third grade and younger than that, you know, if they don't have LGBTQ plus role models, like they may not even realize that it's like an option as an identity, right? And because I know that was true for me when I was a kid. Like, I always knew I was different. I always knew I didn't like fit in cleanly with the boys. And I didn't fit in cleanly with the girls. And there really was no other option than being like cisgender straight, right? And I wish I would have had a queer teacher growing up.
Yeah. And I just hope as the years go on, we're going to see more and more of just, you know, people seeing all colors of the rainbow in their schools, right? So let's move on and talk about some of your work. So as I mentioned in the bio, we talked about writing work that you've done for ASCD, and then kind of writing as a teacher. So in the pre-chat, you clarified, because I was thinking that you've been writing a while you taught in the classroom. But you said kind of during the pandemic, you transitioned to your current role. So if you can explain that a little bit, and then how you got started writing all these publications.
Yeah. So so I did start blogging in 2013 when I was teaching. you know, over the years, it just sort of grew from a personal blog to, you know, being able to write for outlets like EdSurge, Edutopia, mentioned ASCD, Educational Leadership and whatnot. And my, I think my writing has resonated because I see myself as a storyteller and a teacher. I think the truth of the matter is what remains from our time in school are our stories. Mm-hmm. When people reflect on their education growing up, very rarely do they talk about how they learned to multiply fractions or, you know, that sort of thing. Not that those things aren't important. I think those things are really important, right? But like what really sticks are the stories we tell about school and how we learned growing up. And so that's what I aim to do with my writing. And I think that's why it resonates, because there's like this human element of teaching and learning that in an era of standardization and industrialization, you know, we've lost, I think, to a certain extent. And so that's what I aim to do with my writing. To answer part of your question, I left the traditional classroom in 2020, and I did it because I left because of the pandemic and because I was being asked to go back into a classroom where I didn't feel like we had the resources, the support, or the, you know, safety measures in place to make sure that, like, I wasn't bringing COVID home to my husband. And so since then, what I've tried to do is like continue this approach to talking about teaching through storytelling. And it's allowed me to continue to explore personalized learning, which is the, you know, the topic of my first book, with schools and with other organizations. But it's also allowed me to explore the idea of sustainable teaching. And this is the topic of my newest book. I left the classroom in 2020. I started my own practice. I started doing some consulting work. And then this past summer of 2021, was when I really started this sustainable teaching work. And so I had pitched this idea to ASCD, and I said, you know, I really think we should be having a conversation about sustainability. And then as I started to dig into it more, I realized it wasn't right for me to position myself as the expert on sustainability in any way, because sustainability is really personal and it's different depending on your context, depending on your subject area, depending on who you are and who you're teaching, right? And so it only felt right to actually talk to teachers and administrators about what they see as unsustainable in teaching and what they see as sustainable. So I ended up collecting over 300 survey responses and did about over 40 hours of interviews with people. And it sort of, in some ways, really reignited my passion for, you know, changing education in a way that's built in the image of the teachers and students who are breathing life into our schools, and not in the image of people who write curriculum or, you know, curriculum companies and that sort of thing. And so the sustainable teaching book itself is built off of 6 mindset shifts. And through the 6 mindset shifts, I identify some values of sustainable classrooms, as well as some pedagogies that, you know, through my own experience, but also by interviewing and talking to teachers, that I feel would be helpful to move us down a more sustainable route for teaching.
That's the book that you're currently working on, correct?
That's the book I'm currently working on.
Okay.
Yes.
And that
this podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
You said in the pre-chat that won't be out until mid-2023. So there's not like a title or anything for that yet.
Not yet.
Okay. But, you know, we'll keep an eye on the ASCD books and, you know, for that launch. And I think if you could tell a little bit about what the difference is between the sustainable teaching book and your personalized learning book, and kind of how each of those help educators in their work.
Yeah. Well, I will say that work in personalized learning actually inspired the work in sustainability. So the personalized mm-hmm. learning book is sort of a narrower focus, right? On like how to help all students feel seen, heard, and valued in the classroom. And that book was inspired by my time working in Silicon Valley. So after I mentioned the, you know, LGBTQ lesson before, and I realized at the end of that school year that I just couldn't stay there. Like I couldn't be in a place where I couldn't let my identity be seen. Like I remember this, I remember the superintendent saying from that district, I remember him saying in a meeting, you know, Paul, this is, we're not ready for this. Maybe in 5 or 10 years. And he could see that I was upset. And he said, I feel like you're taking this really personally. And I was like, I am. Yeah. Like, how can I not take this personally? You're telling me that people, we can't talk about people like me in school. Mm-hmm. And so I knew at that point, I was like, I can't stay here past this year. And I started looking for other jobs. And so I found this job in San Francisco, working for an education technology startup company and network of micro schools. So our charge there was to personalize learning at scale. I was simultaneously a technology developer and a teacher. It was like a really big, really unsustainable job because I was teaching full time and then trying to contribute to this, you know, this new vision for personalized learning and help build tools. So to make a very, very long story short, I spent 3 years there. And what I realized from working there was that we were defining personalization in the wrong way. And I think a lot of people define personalization in the wrong way. They define it as, or they see this direct relationship between individualization and personalization, meaning the more we individualize learning, the more personalized it will be. But the reality in practice, and I know this as a practicing teacher who tried to, right, individualize as much as possible in order to personalize, is that there are diminishing returns on individualization because it can engender social isolationism where everyone's working on their own thing, right? It can create competition in the classroom, especially if you're using those web-based adaptive tools that level kids, because the kids know, right? They know who's on the sixth grade level content versus the fourth grade level content. They talk about it, they compete with one another, and it creates this really toxic culture, which really is just a microcosm, I think, of education culture in general, that it's very achievement focused, it's very competition focused. And so the central thesis of the book is that, you know, personalized learning isn't about individualization. It's about making learning meaningful and relevant to kids. It's about humanizing our classrooms and like finding those points of convergence where everyone can feel as though they belong, but also allowing for points of divergence so that all kids are still seen and heard and valued as individuals in the classroom. And so that's really the emphasis of Reclaiming Personalized Learning, which is, I don't think I even said the title of it yet. Reclaiming Personalized Learning is the title of my first book. And we're actually releasing a second edition in mid-March. Yeah, so I'm really excited about it because it allowed me to sort of reflect on what has changed since the original publication, really taking into account the pandemic, this really, I think, toxic narrative around learning loss. And now it's, you know, people have realized that the word learning loss is not good. And so they've sort of repackaged it or rebranded it as learning acceleration or learning rebounds or learning leaps or whatever. And my opinion is that all of those are equally as deficit-based. Some of them are just like a softer deficit-based. And so I hope that the new version of the book encourages everyone to like move as far away from that learning loss narrative as possible and, you know, seek to make our classrooms places of healing, you know, as we recover from like a really traumatic time. And not center, you know, test scores and all that sort of thing, because that, again, to go back to this idea of what remains from our time in school are our stories. You know, we don't want kids to remember how horrible they felt for their test scores being low on top of, you know, the trauma that's come from living through a pandemic.
Yeah. And I think as we, you know, move into planning for next school year, when this episode comes out, you know, mid to late March, there'll be, you know, people starting to, you know, change positions and figure out where they're going to be next school year. But I think we need to stop thinking about like how it was, you know, up until 2019, trying to compare, right? Or saying kids have been out of the classroom this long. Well, most kids have been in the classroom this year, and there are celebrations to be had for this past year. You know, there's been a lot of difficulties and, you know, a lot of sickness and things like that. But I think, like you said, having this new edition come out can have people look at, like, what are things that we can build upon that have worked in the past two school years? And, you know, how can we navigate our reality now and stop trying to make things work like they did before? That's kind of my, I would say, pet peeve is, like, everybody's trying to, like, do the, you know, old type of pedagogy.
Yeah, and it didn't work, right? Like, it didn't work before. If it was working, then I think we would have been able to weather the pandemic a little bit better. But the pandemic really did was unearth, or maybe not unearth, because a lot of people already knew it, but really make visible to everyone just how much what we were doing wasn't working.
Yeah. And I think, like, even a year ago, I wrote a blog about, you know, the new normal, or, you know, post-pandemic, which we still aren't post-pandemic. But I think just these past 2 years have given us the opportunity to reflect on, well, what has worked. Maybe it's different for different districts and different schools, but also, you know, try to move away from legislative demands, right? Try to move away from things that are burning our staff out, things that aren't showing the true proficiency of our students. So, you know, I think a lot of it just kind of depends on having the state level of Department of Ed work with our districts a little bit more too, and have those people actually get into the classrooms. I'm really happy that this year, the district level people, because of the lack of subs, are getting into the classrooms more. But it'd be nice if the state level people also were able to see what's going on at different schools.
Well, I would also like to see, you know, not only a listening to teacher voices, but an amplifying of, like, give the mic to teachers, let teachers actually speak on their own behalf, you know? Mm-hmm. One of the things that has come through very strongly, I don't know, in the sustainable teaching project, the research that I've been doing, is this idea of, like, flattening organizations, or making it so that, like, power structures aren't as vertical, right? Because what happens inevitably is that power is concentrated with the, you know, central office admin, principals, that sort of thing. And, you know, principals and admins, superintendents, they play a really important role in schools. And I'm not advocating for the demonization of administrators, or, you know, like, getting rid of administrators, but, you know, creating structures within school systems where teachers' voices go straight to the top and are amplified on their own, I think would one, make a huge impact, positive impact on teacher morale, because when people feel heard and seen, they're more likely to, you know, work through the tough times. Mm-hmm. But I also think we would actually solve very real problems if teachers' voices were amplified, because people aren't going to know problems exist if they don't hear about them from the sources themselves, which in this case often are teachers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And in my experience, it's been like, if the teacher is a part of the union and the union supports the issue, then it might be amplified. But, you know, it's not always something that the union supports, or the teacher might not be a member of the union. So I think, yeah, maybe having these district level people in a school, because I know in some districts in the Denver area, there are administrators from the district that have 2 days a week that they're working as a sub, and they sometimes go to the same schools at least once a week. So maybe if people have maybe that contact, that point of contact of somebody who has maybe quote unquote has more power in their district, and they're able to, you know, go through that person, I think that helps. But also, yeah, like you said, the flattening of the hierarchy would be great. I know as a teacher, I used to have just a lot of anxiety about voicing anything, as opposed, you know, even as simple as the cell phone policy, because, you know, it was kind of up to the individual teachers, right, in our classroom. It couldn't be made a school-wide thing, right? But yeah. I think, like, there's a lot that, you know, can be done, and hopefully will be, you know, teachers will feel more heard in the next couple of years coming up. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your webinars. You have a few coming up this spring. If you have some information on where people can go to find out about those.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am partnering with Imagine Learning, actually. March 3rd is when that webinar will be. And if you go to Imagine Learning's website, you can sign up for it. And if the date has, the date might have passed actually by the time of this. So I think you can get the webinar retroactively. And then I'm also, so my, I'm releasing my new book, or my, the second edition of my book, I should say, in March. And then I'm doing a webinar with Corwin on May 2nd. And so you can access that webinar by signing up for Corwin's email list, and they'll send you all the information on that. You can also follow me on Twitter and on Instagram, because I'll be putting information up about it there. But I'm really excited to talk more about personalized learning in the coming weeks and months, because I think that if we, use personalized learning as a means for humanizing teaching and learning in the fall, that we will be able to create those spaces where it's more about healing from a traumatic couple of years, as opposed to, you know, catching up or trying to get back what we've lost over these past couple years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great way to word it. More about healing, right? We're not trying to catch up. Yep. So, so the revisions, the second edition of your book is coming out also in March, and that's going to be available on Amazon and ASCD. And, if people have the first book, should they get the second book? Is it almost completely different book?
Yeah. First of all, it is on Corwin's website. This personalized learning book is a Corwin book. Okay. The sustainable teaching book will be in with ASCD.
Okay.
I would say it is a good idea to get the second edition if you already have the first edition. Mm-hmm. I can tell you a little bit about what I've changed. First of all, I've cut a fair amount of the book in order to make it a little bit more practical. There were times as I was reflecting on the first book, or the first edition, I should say, there were times where I sort of lived in this theoretical space. And I think I was working through a lot of just my own philosophy on teaching, right? And I realized that like what teachers need is they need solutions for tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. They don't need to live in the theoretical. They can do that when they want to. But like their teachers are looking for what can I do tomorrow to make learning more personal. And so I feel like the book does a better job of that. The second edition does a much better job of that. And then also the second edition really responds to the current realities that we are facing, specifically the learning loss narrative, but also sustainability, how to make personalized learning, how to make all kids feel heard, seen, and valued in our classrooms, how to make that sustainable. And to counteract this narrative that you have to individualize everyone's curriculum in order to make all kids feel seen and heard. I also clarified my take on learner agency, which learner agency is huge right now. Everyone is looking for how do we give kids more ownership? But again, how do we give kids more ownership in a way that's sustainable? We don't want to give up all control to kids, because we, the teachers, we play a valuable role in our rooms, right? It's a partnership. And so the chapter on learner agency, I feel like is probably the most changed out of all the chapters. And I think will give people just some really practical ways to give kids agency without making it unsustainable.
Okay. So good to know. Yeah. Kind of what those changes are in that book. And I'll definitely post a link to the sites that people can sign up for the webinars or retroactively access the webinar if March 3rd has passed. So I've had a great time talking with you about your experience coming out at your school and kind of the shift that you made in what you've done since the pandemic. Out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
That's a really good question. I think I'd like listeners to take with them the idea that what remains from our time in school is our stories. Mm-hmm. And that if you center that and if you remember that, like, you are part of the story, right? You're part of the story that your students are writing. I think it just, it helps you remember what's actually important. Mm-hmm. I hope people take that with them today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really good to reiterate that, because like you've mentioned several times, that's what the kids remember, or things that happen, interactions with friends and teachers, not what they learned in math class.
Right.
Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
Yeah. So my website is www.paulemrick.com. You can find me on Twitter at @Paul_Emrick and also on Instagram at @Paul_Emrick. I'm way more active on Twitter. So if you have a Twitter, please connect with me there. Those are the main places.
Great. I'll make sure to put those in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure having you on.
Thanks so much for having me. I had a great time.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at @OutOfTrenchesPC.